There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to Amazon.com/comedy ad free. That's Amazon.com/comedy ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Dashing through the snow on a one-horse open triple jump podcast, something all the lyrics. It's time for an advert. It's not faked. Something, something else. My name is Ben.
Just sort of waiting for you. I feel like you should go to the end now.
And Peter's here with me. Oh, this is the triple jump podcast. It's a video game podcast. Thank you very much for clicking subscribe and download. I hope you've subscribed. You better have subscribed.
Oh, that was it. Okay.
That's all I got. I sort of fell over my words there. I was trying to fit in too many syllables. I'm not a rapper, Peter.
Well.
Apart from Christmas puzzles.
Oh, I think you could be.
You think?
Yeah. Should old podcasts for video games all be as good as ours? No, they won't be. They never will be. We're triple jump.
I love that last bit. That was really good.
Yeah, I think so too.
Inspired lyric. Hey, why not tweet your Christmas song parodies relating to this niche video game podcast?
Or New Year.
to us at Team Triple Jump on Twitter. Go on, do it. You'll get all the lyrics. One big thread of tweets.
Especially with the sort of and ums and stumbles and stretched out syllables and squashed in syllables like that. Otherwise, it's not really worth doing, is it?
So. We need to know where we got to stumble.
Yeah.
You know, otherwise, what's the point? Welcome, everybody, to our Triple Jump video game podcast. It is the last podcast that we're going to be doing together this year.
Yeah. That's right. But don't worry, we will be back in the new year. You know, 2021, the year that's going to be maybe better than 2020, possibly.
Everything will be fixed.
Yeah.
Because it's a new year. New year, new me, new us, right?
1st of January, I'm going to go out, I'm going to lick all the handles on the metro, because it'll be safe to do so by then.
It will be. COVID will be gone.
Yeah.
Because it's 2021. So please be safe out there.
Please be safe out there.
But right at the top of the show, I will just clarify that, yes, this is our sort of Christmas show. We've got some Christmassy questions, and this will be the last one we're recording together. There will be a bonus podcast going out next week where I will be joined by a few guests. So if you're a patron and you have supported us on patreon.com/teamtriplejump, please look out for a bonus question post. That was hard. I was thinking of the words and it was really hard to find them in my brain.
You can ask the questions that you don't want to ask me for some reason.
Yeah, that you've been holding back on because you thought you'd upset Peter, maybe.
Submit those ones.
So, yeah, that post will be up now by the time this podcast is out, so go and have a look. And also, while we're away over the break, there will be a Game of the Year post. We'll be doing our Game of the Year show when we come back in the new year. Mm-hmm. And we need everyone to comment their three favorite games of 2020. And then, as we did last year, there will be a subsequent post sort of putting the most frequently mentioned games in the comments into a poll where people can then vote for their game of the year. And that is how that will work. And we will do that alongside our individual games of the year on the first show back in 2021. But before we go any further, Peter, we do need to talk about this week's video game podcast sponsor.
We do. Now, it's coming up to Christmas, as you say. It's a time where we should all be getting together, being good to our fellow man, and, you know, having a good time. I mean, when I say getting together, I mean safely, within your Christmas bubbles, or maybe not at all if you can.
Or bootlegs.
Yeah, but, you know, it's the season of goodwill. And unfortunately, in the video game world right now, there's some good news, there's some bad news, there's some negativity, as there always is. Some people are trying to be happy and positive. But with a recent game in particular, it's been slightly disappointing. There's a lot of hype for this game. It's come out, and now you can see everyone's Wilsons through their trousers. But there's a new initiative that's been put out by CD Projekt Red, to try and rally the troops and get people feeling happy again. They've hired this is a really convoluted backstory,
okay,
isn't
ready.
It?
I'm
they've
ready.
Hired a celebrity representative to be the face of this initiative. So everyone, just cheer up, because it's time for Cyberpunk 2077.
No way, is that our guy?
Now, we're all just going to be positive about games that just come out, because bad is not good. And
good is not good,
which is not bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Stay positive, which isn't unpositive, yeah?
No. Everyone try to be not unnegative. I'm not sure about that one.
De-positive. Don't do that.
Don't depositate.
Be positate.
Cyberpunk 2077. I'm Simon Miller, and I'm here to tell you just to be positive about everything, especially the game that just come out, in which you can see people's... I mean, Simon Miller would never even say the word Wilson, I don't think. He's that wholesome and
genitalia.
Lovely. Genitalia. Hey, we've all got them. Don't worry about it.
Don't worry about it. Whether they're in the trousers, out the trousers, under the trousers, through the trousers, it doesn't matter.
As long as it's a positive genitalia.
Yeah, well,
positive genitalia.
Be careful if it's positive. Make sure you inform your sexual partners and also visit a clinician.
Yeah, and make sure that in utilising the genitalia that you get a positive response when asking the question, do you want to utilise my genitalia?
Shall we engage our genitalia? I'm Simon Miller. Would you like to engage genitalias with me?
That is an affirmative yes. That is a positive.
Thank you, Simon Miller. I would. Okay, Simon Miller, here we go. What are we doing? Engaging genitalia.
So that's our sponsor this week. Except it's not.
What?
Because Simon Miller would never sign up for a service which was pro-sex. Simon Miller is
famously prudish. Simon Miller hates sex. I know he loves us and he would never do it, but at what point do we get a cease and desist from Simon Miller?
What, because we're so accurate in
because
the way
it sounds that could have been two Simon Millers right there saying all that stuff, and that's bad for his brand.
It is, because if people take that audio out of context and post it to YouTube, people will think it's Simon Miller saying, oh, you're all right, Simon Miller. Yeah, I'm all right, Simon Miller. Let's have sex.
Let's engage genitals.
So, it can't be long before.
Okay. Wow. That's a shame that it's not real, though, because that would make me buy that game in an instant.
Yeah, it would turn things around for you.
It would. Yeah. Listen, I can put up with epileptic seizures in Cyberpunk, but what I can't put up with is a lack of Simon Miller.
Yeah.
And that Simon Miller is what I need.
A lack of unpositiveness.
Exactly. You've got to be depositive. Be not deep. Whatever.
Be
anyway,
negative.
I can't believe that that's not real. I tell you who is real, though.
Who?
Peter. It's the patrons over at patreon.com/teamtriplejump, where for as little as $1 per month, you can support us there financially, and you'll get access to the weekly podcast post from which we gather the questions for the podcast. And also, if you want to vote in the Game of the Year stuff and make your voice heard, please do support us there.
Yeah.
Don't forget to do it. So, yeah, go over there, patreon.com/teamtriplejump. Before we get to the first question, one final question for you. Oh, pre-question question. Uh-huh. Outrageous. A little bit of pud. So what are we doing in the walk space this week?
Do you know, some families like to go for a nice Christmas walk on Christmas morning, don't they? Through the probably not snow, because it's December, not February.
And, yeah, through the flooded field.
Through the flooded field, the mud, maybe it's a bit drizzly. You know, especially this year, people might feel the need to get out, get some fresh air, rather than be stuffed up and sharing breath. It was lovely. So
you
maybe
share
could,
breath with me?
Could, oh, yeah, all right, let's be positive about it. So maybe we could go for a nice, either a nice, lovely, Christmassy, snowy, you know, Christmas card-looking walk, or a British Christmas Day walk, which, as you say, is the flooded fields. One or the other. I'll leave it up to the editor.
James.
Well, I wasn't sure. Sometimes it's still you now and then, but
I it's think
it's
probably
James.
You know, James has a lot on his plate this week, so it might end up being me, but I think it's probably James.
James.
Is it you? I don't know. You can't hear him. He's miles away.
He can add it in post, unless it's not him.
It might not be him. I don't know. I can't say for sure. Anyway, first question, Peter.
Yeah.
What we got?
This is from Connor Mountford, who says, "Hi, boys. Cyberpunk is seemingly digging themselves further and further into a hole and lost all their trust from The Witcher.
No.
My question is there a studio that you've loved, but their next game made you despise them, or at least stop paying attention to them?
Merry Christmas.
Merry
Christmas. What a Christmas question.
It's okay. Man, it's difficult. I can certainly think of publishers who sometimes also develop games that definitely lost my trust. You know, once upon a time, I used to be a big fan of EA. You know, they made the Harry Potter games, or published them, I should say. That's the point I'm trying to make here. And Simpsons Road Rage and stuff. They developed some stuff as well, rather than just publish it. I think they did some of the like best Medal of Honor games. And now, EA, don't really like them that much. Which, I mean, I seem to blow hot and cold or give mixed messages with, you know, given that I, you know, their biggest recent sin is Battlefront 2. And I'm, at the same time, a bit of a defender of Battlefront 2. But only because it plays well and you can play it without touching the microtransactions at all. So, you know, I think that's the only reason there. But I still don't like EA's business practices. Like, they shouldn't have done what they did. So broadly speaking, EA, but it's hard to think of a specific game that, you know, this game came out and suddenly it was like, oh, well, now I don't like you, EA. that's tricky. But, I mean, possibly in fear of just talking about something I talk about all the time, especially on the podcast, to sort of preempt something, I would say that, you know, big fan of Beyond Good and Evil by Ubisoft, and just the further along we go with the as yet unreleased prequel, I think I'm going to be really, really disappointed the closer we, like, the more that I hear about this game, it just can't go right, can it? Like, it's, for starters, it's an Ubisoft game, and therefore it's going to be a bit cookie cutter, or, you know, they're just going to mix and match previous mechanics from other games, because that's how they do these things. But also, I'm just, you know, I really hope they prove me wrong. I really hope it comes out well. But just the troubles that game has had in its development, it's already made me kind of feel like cross with what they're about to do with a game that I, or a franchise that I love. I tried to think of a studio that made that I really liked, and then they made a specific game and then I didn't like them anymore. But I don't know if I can think of a proper example for that. I don't know if you came up with something.
Yes, I did. I came up with one specific example. So there's a few studios that when you see, you know, on a debut trailer for a game or whatever during E3 and so on, you see their name or their logo pop up and you're like, oh, okay, here we go. This is worth paying attention to. That you got your Naughty Dogs. For me, you got your From Software. You see those logos pop up, you're like, okay, I'm paying attention. What is this? What are we looking at? BioWare has lost all credibility to me.
Yeah.
Seeing a BioWare logo used to be that exciting. You know, I was a huge fan of Mass Effect 2 and 3. Mm-hmm. And I even played Dragon Age Inquisition, which was good, but not incredible. I wasn't a Dragon Age fan, really, of the first two. I didn't play those games. But I played Inquisition on PS4. And by all accounts, that was kind of a letdown for fans of Dragon Age, and it did have problems. It was quite buggy and a bit wonky in places, but since then, their stock has just plummeted. So much so that when we saw the BioWare logo at the beginning of the trailers for the new Mass Effect game and the new Dragon Age game at the Game Awards last week or the week before, whenever it was,
yeah,
didn't do anything for me. Mm-hmm. Even those trailers, I watched them, I was like, I don't care. You know, if it had gameplay, maybe I would care a little bit more. But even if it did, you know, the stuff that they showed of Mass Effect Andromeda before launch, which was, I'm assuming, is going to be a similar situation here, where we're going to be looking at CG trailers and sort of blurry background footage of artists working on concept art.
Yeah.
And we're going to be seeing that for years, because I have absolutely no faith that these games are anywhere near done, and EA has just done an EA and showed them off years before they're ready. And will just allow hype to build and build and build, and especially with the new Mass Effect, as it appears to return to the era of the original trilogy, as Liara is in it.
Right.
But even then, like, I saw BioWare pop up, I saw those trailers, and I was like, I just don't, this doesn't make me feel excited. And that's sad, because I used to watch E3, and even from developers I didn't know, I'd be like, oh my God, that looks amazing. Even though it's just a CG trailer, like, oh, that looks cool. Ooh, interesting. Whereas now, it's just, I'm so cynical and jaded because the industry keeps making bad decisions and making bad games. And BioWare in particular has just been on such a losing streak that, yeah, no thank you.
That answer has now made me think of one as well,
okay.
Which I would say is Bethesda. Like,
yeah,
I think
that's
at
fair.
This point,
yeah.
maybe over a process of a couple of games rather than one specific one. But, you know, Fallout 76 certainly was kind of the death knell of their current, I don't know, the state they're in now. I'm not saying they can't bring it back eventually. Like, I think when they, when the next Elder Scrolls comes out in about 2077, you know, I'll be interested in that. But in the meantime, you know, I've been a bit disappointed by the last couple of Fallout games, actually. Like, Fallout 4, in the end, didn't do that much for me. I guess I've never been a huge, huge Fallout fan. I've always enjoyed, I enjoyed Fallout 3 in New Vegas, but yeah, like, Fallout 4, I was like, there's something about this that I don't know why, but I just don't really like it that much. I think maybe that was when the engine started to feel very dated to me, mm-hmm. even though it needed fixing long before then. And then, yeah, Fallout 76, I never played, but, you know, part of the reason I didn't play it is because I saw what was going on with it. And that used to be a studio that if I, you know, saw their name, I'd think, oh, what's this going to be? This is exciting. And now I'm like, oh, what are they going to screw up next, sort of thing.
Right. Right.
But as I say, you know, I am a big Elder Scrolls fan. I've never played Elder Scrolls Online, but the single player games I do like, so I will probably still be excited for that when it eventually comes up again. But
you just don't have the boundless enthusiasm you used to.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, Peter, that wasn't a very positive conversation,
no,
was it?
It wasn't. Our sponsor's going to quit by the end of the podcast.
Oh, no. I think we should quickly move on to another section.
Yeah.
Should we call it whoop?
Yeah. Whoop, WWP, yeah. What we positiving.
Yeah, that's it. It's time for What We Positiving, which, of course, translated from Simon Miller Ease, means what we playing. Peter, what are you playing?
The main thing I've been playing this week is, I nearly said Elder Scrolls because we've just been talking about it. Assassin's Creed is what I meant to say, Valhalla.
Ooh.
Continue.
You got the cat?
No, not yet. No, I've been doing a lot of running around and just, like, kind of exploring the world, picking up map markers, encountering seemingly random kind of radiant encounters and things, doing little exploration quests. One thing I didn't expect, and I don't know how much of the game you've watched or heard about, there's a weird sort of mission type that you can do, which maybe has been in the past couple of games as well, but I've certainly never been aware of these, where the Animus makes a sort of assault course for you, like up in the sky, and you do like parkour on these computery virtual reality cubes, So you're running around in like the Viking world as your Viking character, and then suddenly you will sort of go like all wibbly, and it'll go, and you'll still be in that world, but your character model will change to the person who is in the Animus, whose name I don't even know because I don't pay attention to those bits. And then these boxes will appear, and you have to like climb around on those and stuff, which is kind of weird. It's called like an anomaly. So I did one of those the other day, which was very strange and unexpected, and you just have to sort of get to the end. And really, it's clearly just a way of them including a parkour challenge in that game in a world that is, you know, doesn't have like huge numbers of skyscrapers and great big buildings and things like that, or tight streets and alleyways and things. So because there's a lot of open forest and small villages, that's probably the best way for them to include some interesting parkour challenges. But yeah, so that was weird. So you're just kind of going around doing cleaning up map markers and things, and I've done a couple of main missions, but I'm just sort of enjoying the world really, which is why I've not gone too hard on the main story. Just sailing around and riding horses and hunting wildlife and things. It's good. I'm really enjoying it.
Nice.
The other thing I've played a little bit of this week is some more Spyro Reignited Trilogy, because I've been in training. I had you know, a towel around my neck and a sweatband on my forehead. And, punching frozen meat in my walk-in freezer.
when's the stream again? Is it Sunday?
It's today, I believe.
Oh, it's today.
At time of release. So, in fact, it may even be kind of right now, depending on... I've not completely decided what time of day I'm going to do it on. So, which isn't great if people are listening to this right now on Saturday. It's probably starting at either 12 noon, which is when the podcast goes out, right? Is that right?
No, usually goes out at 4:20.
Oh,
literally.
Does it?
I'm not even joking, but we can push it to 12. That's not a problem.
Well, maybe we shouldn't, though, because if a tweet goes out saying podcast is live, and also there's tweets going out saying Peter's live on Twitch, then that's a bit of a clash. So 4:20, I guess. So it happened today. I might still be live, because it'll probably take me 5 or 6 hours. So I'll be over on Twitch, but there'll be a VOD available as well. I have played through all of Spyro 1, hopefully without breathing fire until I get to the final boss. And it's quite possible I'll certainly be able to get all of the dragon eggs from the thieves without flaming. And I can definitely get 78 of the 80 dragons, and two of them are up a wall that I have to do a really glitchy jump to get up, and it's so inconsistent. I've spent like probably hours in total trying to get like the exact way to do this jump, and I've still not worked out how to do it on command. So I'll probably give myself a time limit, like, can I get up this wall? And if I can't, then we'll either be finishing without all the dragons, or maybe I'll have to do a bit of a cheat and just prove with some capture that I've got on my PS5 that, hey, you can get up this wall. Here's me doing it back to back 7 times in a single clip, but I can't do it right now, so I'm going to breathe fire once to break the door down to get up this wall the correct way, and we'll pretend that I just did the jump that I did in this clip. so we'll see how that goes / how that went. But so that's mainly what I've been doing. Bit of Valhalla and a bit of training time for Spyro.
Nice.
It's been good. What have you been positiving, Ben?
Well, I've been positiving some more bug snacks.
Ooh, delicious.
I've now got the platinum. And
well done.
What a weird game.
Yeah.
That is. We all know it's weird, but yeah, the story really takes a turn into sort of such strange territory. And it's sweet. It's a sweet game. It's a bit janky, and a lot of the traps that you use don't really work properly, and sometimes you have to leave an area or come back in or do like a proper reset because it just, you know, some bug snack is just, their behavior is all weird and they're ruining things,
right?
And they're not where they should be. But each area is sort of like it feels like what the natural evolution of Pokemon Snap would have been if they'd continued to release those games.
Bug snaps.
Exactly, bug snaps. So, but obviously, you know, you're not on rails, and each area is like a little puzzle. You've got to work out which how to catch each thing. So sometimes, you know, a snack will be frosty and you can't catch it because it'll freeze you.
Right.
So you need to sort of, some of them, you need to get them to chase you into like a hot spring and then you can catch them afterwards. Or sometimes, and one of the more frustrating ones, you need to shoot like a plunger with a rope attached across a cave so that a flying bug snack will land or run into it and fall down to the ground, but you can't catch it because it's on fire, because it's a flaming Cheeto thing.
Right.
Then you need to tempt a frozen bug snack to chase you into the cave at the same time and charge after you, and then charge into the frozen bug snack, the fiery bug snack, which will get rid of its fire, and then you can catch it. But obviously, with it being a bit janky and wonky, it can be a recipe for real frustration, and it doesn't always work as intended. But on the whole, I really enjoyed that game. I thought it was really nice, and I liked it.
Mm-hmm. Brilliant. Oh, well, that's lovely. Never work with children and animals, though, they say. So
yeah, definitely not bug snacks, bug that's snacks. For sure.
Yeah. 100%.
Sure. I've also started Sackboy: A Big Adventure.
Wonderful.
That is how I would describe it. It's so lovely. For some reason, they've made the creative decision to give Sackboy a voice, whereas before he didn't have one.
Mm-hmm.
So he doesn't say words or anything, but he does sort of like react to things in cutscenes and stuff. And they've given him the voice of a boy, which I suppose is understandable, but it's really jarring for me. Yeah, well, it's jarring for me as someone who's been a big Little Big Planet fan since the first game. To hear this adorable cloth man start making human noises. I don't like it. It's strange. But anyway, I'll get used to it, I'm sure. It's just, obviously, you can't create anything. It's just a 3D platformer. It's really, really nice. I like it a lot. It's got a fantastic soundtrack. There's a whole level similar to that Crash Bandicoot one, the Crash 4 one that's set around the music and stuff, and everything's moving to the beat.
Oh, yeah.
There's one like that, but it's set to Uptown Funk. And it's really good. And I've heard no one talk about it. I feel like, it reviewed sort of high 70s thereabouts on Metacritic.
Yeah.
I feel like it's better than that. And I feel like a lot of people might be sleeping on this game. It's 4-player local co-op as well. I'm just playing it on my own. And it's really, really good fun. So if you've got a partner or a significant other or family members or kids that you want to play a game with, I highly recommend this. It's on PS4 as well as PS5. And it's a really lovely game, and there's a lot in it as well. There's certain stages that are only playable in co-op too. So,
well, I'd
highly recommend it.
Might give that a go before Bugsnax then, because those are the sort of two games I'm thinking of moving on to next after Valhalla. But I wasn't really sure what to go to first. But that sounds like it's worth playing as soon as I can.
Yeah, I'd be interested to get your thoughts as a platforming fan.
Yeah,
But it's nice. It's a nice game. I like it. It's good fun. And finally, last night I played a little bit of Warzone. They've just patched in a new map. It's a timed event, so it's not like a new season where they've given us a new Battle Royale map. It's just a timed event with a significantly smaller map on an island, and it's got a limited player count, so about 50 players or thereabouts, teams of 3 maximum, and the circle obviously closes a lot faster. It's a lot smaller. There are certain chests that you can open in there that will respawn rather than sort of just the single use chests that are, you know, have been the standard for this mode.
Right.
And I played 4 games last night and I won 2 of them back to back.
Oh,
yeah.
Excellent. Well done,
King Call of Duty over here. No, I'm not that guy. I didn't get that many kills, but I was on the winning team and that's what matters. So.
Excellent.
There we are. So that's now live, that event. Again, probably a limited time thing. We'll all really enjoy it, and then they'll take it away.
Yeah.
So there we are. That's what I've been positiving.
Excellent. Well, it's time for a very positive question.
Yes, I suppose it is.
Would you like to read it for us?
Do you know who else supposes it is?
Who?
Moses supposes. Yeah, that's the name of the wonderful patron who submitted this question. Yep. Moses Supposes asks, what Christmas movie do you think would make the best video game?
I mean, not to be anything less than positive, but I did struggle with this one too, because I don't think there are many Christmas movies that would make a great video game. Well, certainly not in a traditional genre. I did think of, obviously controversially, some people say Die Hard is a Christmas movie. And there was the Die Hard trilogy on PS1, which I believe is kind of fairly beloved. I don't know if it was critically a success, but I think people talk about it as being, you know, quite a good game. Mm-hmm. The trilogy set. I thought that despite Home Alone being our most recent episode of Worst Games Ever, I think that there could be some fun to be had in Home Alone. Maybe if it was like super sandboxy and physicsy, because those are real words.
Yes.
And it really gave you massive creative freedom to. So you've got almost like a tower defense game, but you kind of create your own custom traps using, like, you know, like little makeshift switches and trip wires and things that you can like hook up to moving parts and stuff. It would be a bit of a deviation from the film, because really he just like hung cans of paint from rope in the ceiling and swung them at people. But you know, if you went slightly more contraption-y, I guess, or sort of Rube Goldberg machine, I think there could be a lot of fun to be had in almost like a Gmod style. Or there's a PC game called Besiege, where you make these little siege engines that can like roll around, and it just gives you loads of little Lego parts to put a siege engine together. And I kind of feel like you could do that with booby traps, like static booby traps. So I think that would be a fun game if you had a really good creative studio working on that, who really came up with like lots of fun little bits and bobs to play with. I'd like to play a sort of tower defense, house defense game with like very customizable traps. People could like share them online, you know.
Yeah. That'd be fun.
Mm-hmm.
You could really, really, really hurt those burglars.
Yeah. Yeah, just in the worst possible ways.
Maybe.
Outside of that, I kind of struggled to think about it. It kind of depends what you call a Christmas movie. Like, you know, some people would say that The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe is a bit of a Christmas movie, given that it's in a, you know, half the film is set in like a frozen world and they literally meet Father Christmas at one point. And I think that, you know, I wouldn't say no to like a reboot of some Narnia video games. It's like an interesting enough world. There's, you know, it's sort of sword and sorcery kind of thing. I think under the right studio, they could do an interesting Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe game, maybe. But again, that was on Worst Games Ever, so I'm really selling these, I think.
You really are. You've picked two winners there.
Yeah, but outside of that, I kind of thought that most Christmas movies are just people getting into, like, silly hijinks in the snow and, you know, trying to put up lights and the lights go out and they burn the turkey and, oh, how
What about Tim Allen humorous. Becoming Father Christmas?
Yeah, well, I mean, maybe there could be a Father Christmas game where you go around and deliver presents and stuff, but I don't know, it sounds a bit inane, really. I think it would get boring pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Do you have any better contenders? I hope you do.
I've picked one.
Right.
I've got one pitch because I've not really seen many Christmas films.
Well, that's the other thing. I was trying to even think of Christmas movies that I've seen.
Fortunately, one just came to mind immediately that I have seen, and that's Elf.
Right.
Starring Will Ferrell.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone's favorite comedy actor, Will Ferrell.
Yeah.
And I would pitch Elf, but in a Telltale-style episodic game.
Okay.
And decisions could range from the innocuous, like what to put in the horrific spaghetti that he put all the M&Ms and the whatever it is, this maple syrup and stuff in.
Yeah.
To sort of slightly more insidious, like maybe being a bit of a naughty boy and you know, being a bit of a rascal and getting on Santa's naughty list and stuff.
Ooh, more of a goblin.
Yeah, a little Christmas goblin. And the twists that end every episode of a Telltale game traditionally could be like, turns out the 6-foot man is not an elf.
What?
Oh, dun, dun, dun. You've got to go to New York and so on and so forth. I think it would be pretty linear, obviously, because it's got to follow this plot where he's just funneled from location to location. But I still think that there could be a lot of whimsical fun to be had there without, you know, many decisions being made a la The Walking Dead. Like, will you save your child or will you kill the dog? you know.
Yeah.
That sort of fun stuff that we love to do at Christmas time.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. This is really going to upset a lot of people. I've never actually seen Elf, and I know that people talk about how it's like the best Christmas. It's a lot of people's favorite Christmas movie.
It's one of the few Christmas movies I've seen. It's really, it's just a comedy set at Christmas. It's
good. I've seen clips of it. Yeah, so I'm aware of like some of the kind of skits and moments in it that people like, because it's the kind of thing that gets shared around social media and stuff. I think it's partly because I've only got a passing interest in Will Ferrell, everyone's favorite comedy actor except mine, seemingly.
Right.
But again, that's really, I think, because just I've not seen that many of his movies, and maybe if I had done, I would like him more. So it's a bit of a cyclical, it's a vicious circle, because I've not seen much of him. I'm like, I could take or leave watching Elf, I'm fine, like, I don't know, Will Ferrell's all right, I guess. And then if I did watch Elf, I'd think Will Ferrell was probably a lot better than I do. So, yeah, weird one. Maybe I'll play the video game when it comes out.
Yeah, you should. I think the Telltale format is just very adaptable to, well, as they proved, to a lot of different properties that wouldn't necessarily make, or that would be challenging to translate into a traditional game.
That's the problem with Christmas movies. That's kind of where I struggled here. But you're right that Telltale does work as
Tim Allen first person shooter Santa Claus film.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he becomes Santa Claus and then he has to participate in a terrorist attack on a Russian airport, like from Modern Warfare 2. That's
Remember,
it. That's
no
the
Russian.
One. No Russian.
Yeah.
Perfect. We've sold it. Well done, Tim Allen.
Brilliant.
Easy.
That was a weird noise, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a little strange.
Do you know what's an anagram of weird noise?
Will Ferrell.
Not quite.
Simon Miller.
No. Weird news. It's not. Oh, I didn't even have mine ready. No, fine, let's
you
move
were
on.
So, you were so, okay, all right.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Weird news time. It's time for weird news, weird gaming news. It would have been really tricky to find anyway, but I haven't got Christmas-related weird gaming news. Have you?
No, I haven't. I didn't even
That's
think.
That's fine. I don't think there was any expectation to do that. What's your weird news, Peter?
I've got a weird news that cannot be the YouTube thumbnail or title for today's podcast, so I hope yours is not about bums or anything, because, then we'll have nothing. CD Projekt, this is according to Kotaku, CD Projekt is adjusting Cyberpunk 2077's, quote, distracting amount of dildos. Okay. This is written by Nathan Grayson, and it says underneath Nathan Grayson's name that this article has been filed to dildos, which is
excellent.
Good. They've
excellent.
Got a dildos category on. In fact, I'm going to click on that and see what else is on there. There's a Saints Row article, another Saints Row article, and then this one. And those Saints Row articles are both from 2011 regarding the dildo bat.
They were like, yes,
yeah.
We're finally able to pop the lid off the dildo playlist and stick this one in.
So this is Nathan Grayson on Kotaku. The first time I stepped out of... This isn't one of those write-up where someone describes their gaming experience for like 60 paragraphs, don't worry. It's just an opening. The first time I stepped out of my character's apartment in Cyberpunk 2077, I expected to be greeted by a vast world of machine-powered possibility. Instead, I found a dildo. It was sitting next to a random NPC's foot in my apartment building, near a discarded magazine and some other trash. That's weird, I thought. Then I looked up and saw two additional dildos perched on a nearby banister, positioned between two conversing NPCs who did not seem to be aware of their presence. That too is weird, I thought. It then says, "Warning, this post contains imagery that might be considered not safe for work, but with many of us working from home during the pandemic, what does NSFW even mean anymore, really?" Oh, Nathan. It continues. In my time with Cyberpunk since, I have stumbled across many, many, many more dildos. I've taken to documenting every single one I come across. I've screenshotted 29 dildos. They come in two main varieties. The common studded dildo, the lowly street pigeon of Cyberpunk 2077's vast dildo underground, and the rarer Pylomancer 3000, a utensil of truly formidable size and girth. You can pick them up and either turn them into crafting parts or sell them for a few bucks. They have no use beyond this. Some have been in sex shops and... some have been in sex shops and clubs, places where dildos don't seem so out of place, but others have been on street corners, in restaurants, in chop shops where human beings get disassembled for parts. That really took me down a blind alley there. Disassembled for parts. I've not played this game yet. And of course, scattered amongst garbage, which is pretty much everywhere. There's a screenshot of a dildo by a bin in the street. Brilliant. This is distracting. First off, if you create a world that in many ways resembles our own, but with significantly greater dildo density, people are going to have questions.
I think that's pronounced dildosensty.
Dildodensity.
Dildosensty.
Dildosensty. Right, yes. Okay. But also, I have yet to witness anybody in Cyberpunk actually use a dildo, even in a sex scene between two women. Wow, this is really...
Not even women are using them.
Quite the write-up, isn't it? There's an unlockable dildo weapon, but it's disconnected from the wider plethora of dildos in the game. And while something like that might fit in, say, a Saints Row game, Cyberpunk's overall tone is much darker, even if some side quests are humorous and over the top. So I had to know, why all the dildos, CD Projekt Red? Why? We wanted Night City to be pretty open sexually, said the senior quest designer Philip Weber in an email to Kotaku. They actually responded. Where something by today's standards might be taboo or kinky, it's very normal and commonplace by 2077 standards. So that's their initial reasoning.
Just walk around with their sex toys at all times.
They leave them in the bins, they have them in the apartment building corridor and stuff. If I skip ahead a little bit. The second reason for the high amount of dildos in the world is because they can spawn as random loot, and we were still tweaking those settings, so especially during the early reviews, the amount of dildos in the game world was pretty high. We're going to adjust them so that dildos don't appear too out of place or out of context and distracting, and more where they should be by design, Weber said. Also noting that a recent hotfix may have already adjusted dildosity to an extent. So, at the very least, the dildos probably won't stand out quite so much anymore. They'll still be present, though, as will the dildo melee weapon, and of course, we'll always have our memories of the Halcyon days of Cyberpunk's dildo dystopia. Is it Halcyon?
I think it's Halcyon, yeah.
Yeah, I only realised after I said it.
Wow. I do hope that there's an abundance of dildos when I finally get around to playing this game, otherwise what's the point?
Yeah, I know. I'm going to be really disappointed.
Oh, put it on the back of the box.
There's an excellent screenshot here where someone's looking at a dildo, like in their, I guess, in their inventory, and the subtitles underneath say, "Ugh, looks like Oh, no, that's not actually, that doesn't make much sense. So it's fine. I thought they'd very cleverly like got some dialogue happening at the same time that the sentence ends with only the tip of the iceberg. So I thought there was going to be a joke there, but they're talking about snuffs. I don't know what snuffs are, but
I don't know what a snuff is either.
It's very confusing. Thank you, Nathan Grayson, for that intense write-up of CD Projekt adjusting their dildo amount, dildonsity.
Anyway, yeah. Amazing. That is very weird. Well, we definitely can't have that as the thumbnail.
No. And in fact, we might have already been picked up just purely from audio by YouTube.
The amount of times we've said dildo.
Dildo, yeah. So, Ben, tell me all about the sex scandal in Demon's Souls, or whatever it is that you're going to bring to me today.
Well, the Maiden in Black in Demon's Souls has been up to some really naughty stuff.
Oh,
no, she hasn't. No. She's an angel.
Yeah.
We don't deserve. It's been a while since we've spoken about Hideo Kojima, hasn't it?
Oh, I've missed it. Yeah. I've pissed it.
So here we are. We're back on PC Gamer because Kotaku's website still is just completely unusable for me and I can't wade through it. It's awful.
Mm-hmm.
This is from Rich Stanton. Kojima Productions' Luden's mascot began as a ballet dancer, ended up as an Alan Turing tribute.
Right, okay.
So you know when they launched Kojima Productions 5 years ago?
Yeah.
And the first thing they did was, here's our big, weird astronaut mascot that looks a bit like a knight. You can buy an action figure now. Please just make a video game. And then he made a video game and we were like, actually, never mind.
Yeah, just go back to making astronaut knights.
Make weird astronaut knights again, please. So here we go. Today marks the fifth, well, not today, but this week, marks the fifth anniversary of Kojima Productions, the studio founded by Hideo Kojima following his acrimonious exit from Konami. And to mark the occasion, there were a few minor treats for fans. No, there was nothing about the studio's next game.
Right.
As well as an anniversary wallpaper,
a
JPEG, thank you. There's a short Q&A with Yoji Shinkawa, the artist behind both the Metal Gear Solid series and Death Stranding. The document focuses on the design of the studio's mascot, the all-caps astronaut, Ludens, and goes into considerable detail on the various influences that Kojima wished to be represented in the final design.
God, I forgot how much I dislike all discourse surrounding Death Stranding. Just so pretentious and, oh, I don't know.
It was our favourite game.
It was, and people loved that it was our favourite game and that we didn't keep talking crap about it all the time.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. When we first started to create the company's logo, Mr. Kojima brought up the idea of a ballet dancer jumping, says Shinkawa, as ballet is a comprehensive art. He said he wanted to achieve that digitally. He sounds like such hard work,
yeah.
Hideo. But I had a hard time digesting this idea. No, well, good for you, Shinkawa, for standing up to him.
You can tell he's like breathing down the neck of this designer going, no, make it more 4D.
Ballet is a comprehensive art. I want to achieve that digitally.
Do digital comprehensive art, but don't include any ballet, but make it ballet. That, but not that. Yeah.
But I had a hard time digesting this idea. So one of the ideas that I proposed was a mixture of an astronaut suit and a knight from a digital world, something that Mr. Kojima had suggested in the past and clearly forgotten about when he was given, I don't know, just taken outside for a walk to distract
him. Well, it's not comprehensive art, is it? Digital knights.
No, it's not. He just wanted that in digital form.
Yeah.
Then he added the idea of the Turing machines and the flag to this. By the end, the concept of the ballet dancer was completely gone, and then it says in closed brackets, laughs. It's sad that this never happened, mainly because the internet's reaction to Kojima Productions' new logo being a ballet dancer would have been something to behold. The knight design led to Shinkawa initially wondering about whether the character should have a sword, something shown in the concept art accompanying the Q&A. It's interesting to note that at this stage, the mascot much more resembles a Metal Gear design to my eyes. The final design bulks out the suit's proportions and moves away from the soft elements like the helmet plume towards a more hard-edged and machined feel.
Right.
There were elements of a knight already, so I considered giving Ludens a sword to match, explains Shinkawa. But Mr. Kojima said, we're not going to be fighting, so I don't want them to carry a sword or a gun, but something else. That's where the idea for the flag came from. I think his idea was to explore the digital world and plant a flag on its frontiers while hinting back to the first moon landing in human history. I'm sure there must have been some inspiration taken from that. I'm telling you now, Shinkawa, he made it up as he went along.
As always, yeah.
That's just... The fact that his lead artist is desperately trying to interpret what Hideo Kojima was thinking in exactly the same way that everyone who plays his games does leads me to believe that even if his inner circle has to make up sort of reasoning for what he's suggested, that just proves to me that he's just full of nonsense.
Just reminds me of going to Poetry Live for GCSE English, where poets would read... They'd be there, like, reading their poems out that were on are going to be on our exam. And it'd be like, oh, wow, we get to hear the poet read it and then do a Q&A after. Mm-hmm. And one of them, like, said, okay, any questions? And no one put their hand up. And then our teacher was like, oh, I'll break this silence. She put her hand up and went, oh, yeah, is the yellow-coloured coat, is that to do with cowardice? Is it, you know, it's like being yellow, like cowardly? And he went, no, it was just a yellow coat. It's that kind of thing. Like, you know, yeah. People reverse engineer meaning out of stuff that is sometimes just either in the instance of that poet, it's just, you know, totally normal. It's just an ordinary detail. Or in the case of Kojima, there probably isn't any reasoning. It's just a sort of mess of... I didn't know the Turing machine was even in it. It's just some circles.
Oh, yeah, we'll get to that. We'll get to that in a second. Yeah, okay. They are just some circles, essentially. But yes, that's what they are. Obviously, as we've said numerous times, Hideo Kojima, a very talented man, and we are just sort of poking fun. But it's just he's just so pretentious without meaning to be, I think. Mm-hmm. Unlike some video game auteurs who are outwardly just quite pretentious, he just makes up the wildest stuff and everyone scrambles to find meaning in it when really it's just nonsense.
Yeah.
It's just such nonsense. And if you played Death Stranding and enjoyed it, good for you. But if you played Death Stranding and thought it was some profound experience, then I don't know what's going on there.
Imagine if Kojima teamed up with Peter Molyneux and you had to work for them.
Oh, that game would never come out.
Scrambling around for meaning and also trying to quickly make it so that whenever you plant some piss in the floor, a mushroom will grow there later.
That's the important bit. What I think, Peter, is that the mushroom is quite a, you know, it's a special kind of art. I'm trying to find the wording now.
Comprehensive.
A mushroom is a comprehensive art. And he said that he wanted to achieve that digitally.
Yeah. Yeah,
so there we are.
I mean, of course. Yeah.
That was it. Finally, Shinkawa discusses the spinning gold discs that adorn the suit and equipment of Ludens, which it turns out are a tribute to Alan Turing, the British genius widely considered the father of modern computer science. Mm. This was a request from Mr. Kojima. He wanted to have elements resembling Turing machines in the logo, to have calculator-like parts in Ludens. Turing machines were invented by British mathematician Alan Turing, and they became the base of modern-day computers. The golden discs on Ludens' body are a play on this concept. So the idea was for the suit to have calculators that would have a similar role to that of Turing machines. They search and measure various things as they spin.
Okay. I love the idea. Imagine if you could contact Alan Turing from beyond the grave right now and say, hey Alan, thanks for everything you did during the war. We've decided to pay tribute to you with this logo for a video game company where you piss mushrooms out.
But what do they measure, though? Like, the Turing machine was very important in what it measured. Oh, you know, various things.
Various things, like your Turing machine did, you know? You know, at Bletchley Park, you sat and you all just sort of measured various things, and then we won the war.
Yeah, that's what you did. What was the war about? Oh, various things.
Oh, various things. All kinds of things, really, and varying in nature.
Yeah, here's an action figure with some stuff on it. People can buy it with money and various things.
Yeah.
That's brilliant. It. That's my weird news, which is now officially the lead story because we can't put dildos on our thumbnail.
No. Well, so, there we that are. Was excellent weird news. I really, really enjoyed that one.
Hideo, you rascal. What are you like?
Oh,
love him.
Me.
Love him. I think he's brilliantly weird, but my goodness me.
Yeah.
People take him very seriously, I think.
Time to return to, I think, Christmassy questions now.
Yeah.
Okay. This is from someone with a Christmassy name, too. It's Elfin Arrowsmith.
Wow.
Which is both Christmassy and even more Lord of the Ringsy than it ever was.
Yeah, somehow he's elevated it.
Yeah. Season's greetings from Elfin Arrowsmith. Have you ever played a good Christmas-themed game, expansion, or mod? A couple spring to mind for me. RuneScape used to randomly give out Christmas hats to some of those who played on Christmas Day, and the Game Boy Grinch movie tie-in game was actually quite fun. It was a bit janky, as most movie tie-ins are, but was probably my first experience of stealth in a video game. Wishing you and your families a Merry Christmas. Thank you, Elfin Arrowsmith.
Thank you.
So this is something we've talked about, I think, before on Triple Jump, and also way back when we did a 12 Days of Christmas at What Culture. Do you remember that?
Yeah, the 12 Games of Christmas.
12 Games of Christmas, yeah, where we picked Christmassy games. So those are basically the ones I brought along with me. So one of them that I chose then and now is Bugs Bunny Lost in Time had two snowy levels, but they weren't like super Christmassy. It was just snow. And there weren't Christmas hats or candy canes or grottos. So, you know, that's only loosely tied in. However, one game that I think really absolutely nailed the Christmas level was Bully.
Okay.
And it's something I forget about until I really rack my brains. And then I'm like, oh, hang on. That was like one of the best Christmas levels I've ever played. So Bully works by you sort of wake up in the morning and have to go to bed at night every day within the game. And if you're out away from your dorm at night and it gets to like midnight or one in the morning, you'll just pass out on the floor. So it just make you go to sleep. And when you get to a certain point in the story, if you go to sleep one night, you'll wake up in the morning and it'll pan like across. I think it like does this big panning shot across the school and it says like Christmas is here or something. And then there's this day that is infinitely long. It goes as long as you want it to. I think the clock disappears from the game because normally you only have like, you know, 12 in-game hours of a day and then the day is over. But because there's so much to do in this Christmas level, they get rid of that time limit. So there's snow everywhere. You can have snowball fights with people. There are Christmas missions to do. There are these snowmen around the town and the school that you have to destroy. And they're like a collectible. You know, you have to like smash up 12 snowmen. And there's Christmas lights everywhere. There's unlockable outfits. You can get like jumpers and things like that. And even when you go for detention in that game, normally you have to mow the lawn. But during the Christmas day, you have to go and shovel snow instead. So they really go all out and they change almost every core aspect of the game in some way so that it's got a Christmas spin on it. And, it's all with that sort of rock star kind of grittiness about it. So there's like one of the missions is you go into town and there's this like alcoholic sort of, I don't know if he's a homeless guy or something, but he's dressed as Santa and I think you have to go and get some booze for him and he's all sort of grubby and horrible and almost borderline abusive to you and shouting at you. And so it's got that kind of that rock star edge to it that I think just gives it a little extra something as well. So that's one of my favorite Christmas levels of all time.
Nice.
Yeah. Got a couple more, but just one more actually. I was gonna say, I remember getting when I got my PS2 for Christmas, I think one of the games that came with it, or this may have been the following Christmas when I'd already had the console for a year, I got a game called Motor Mayhem, which is a little known vehicular combat game. It's like Twisted Metal, in a kind of sci-fi world. Mm-hmm. It's actually a lot of fun. And when I put it into my console, everyone was wearing Christmas hats. And I thought, I was naive at the time. And I thought, this game's really good. And I really like the character designs. Like there's this big like rock man and like the, you know, there's all these different sort of sci-fi. There's like a lizard guy and stuff. And it's like, I really like all the designs here, but like, It's kind of weird that everyone's like wearing a Santa hat. Like, why have they done that? And yeah, I thought, I guess it's rather fortuitous that I'm playing it on Christmas today and they're all wearing Santa hats. But this is going to be annoying for for the rest of the game. In fact, it might not have been everyone, but certainly the character that I chose first was wearing a Christmas hat. And of course, it was really that the game was like linked, you know, it was looking at the console clock. And on Christmas Day, everyone wears a Santa hat. But yeah, so that I remember that throwing me off as a child who hadn't played games that had timed events like that. And I was thinking, oh, yeah, this is really strange. That's how about fun. You?
Yeah, I've got a couple here. So as Elfin Arrowsmith said, RuneScape was one that I really enjoyed. I loved their Christmas events in what is now known as old school RuneScape. I used to have a selection of hats and scarves that were sort of timed quest rewards that you couldn't then sell or drop or anything like that. So they were my pride and joy at the time. Yeah. And also it was just fun to see the center of Varrok transformed into Christmas land with a big Christmas tree and snow and so on.
And everyone sort of gets in the spirit and, you know, some people put like different apparel on just to dress up for Christmas.
Yeah. It's nice. It's nice. I always enjoyed that. And of course, my go-to is always Borderlands 2's expansion, Marcus Saves Mercenary Day, which is sort of a bespoke area with a main quest that runs through it, sort of a raid boss at the end. And it takes place in the delightful Christmassy town of Gingerton.
Ooh.
And there's sort of like a model train that runs through it, and you have to go around and defeat some nasties, get the train working again, get the presents back for the town folk, and then there's this giant abominable snowman enemy that you have to defeat at the end of it. And it's really, really fun. It takes like an hour and a half or thereabouts to beat it. And it was just really lovely, and I really like it, and I play it quite a lot, actually. I think I streamed it last year, and yeah. Delightful. Really, really enjoy that. I think they did a great job with it.
Yeah. Ah, that's good. I've just thought of another calendar-based event that happened on Lego Loco.
Okay.
A Lego PC game from like way back, like kind of late 90s, I think. So it wasn't really that good. Well, it was good, but it wasn't very Lego-y, really. Like, things just sort of clicked when you placed them down, but they didn't look super Lego-y. They were just minifigures walking around a town. But around Christmas time, you would unlock snowy versions of, like, all the items that you had. So, like, buildings would have snow on the roofs, and you'd, like, have, like, pine trees and stuff. You could put down little presents just in the street. And then once you'd played through a Christmas day, those items would be saved in your sort of box of Lego so that you could go back and place them anytime. So you could like put snowy stuff down whenever you wanted, which was kind of nice.
Nice.
You could do that.
That's lovely.
Yeah.
I've still been meaning to eventually get around to playing Batman Arkham Origins, which is becoming less and less possible to play the further we move away from its original release, certainly on PlayStation anyway, because Warner Brothers pretends it doesn't exist. And that's a shame, because that game is set at Christmas. It's not Christmassy, obviously, but it is set at Christmas. I've always been meaning to play it as a fan of the Arkham games anyway. It is the black sheep of that family. But I have played Batman Arkham Origins, I think Blackgate is what it's called, on Vita, which was bloody terrible. It was awful. I hated it so much.
Sort of linear, that one, I think. Or maybe it's not.
It's a Metroidvania style thing. Yeah. So there's a lot of retreading paths, and it's kind of like a 2D side-on kind of game.
The
world rotates at various points when you, for some reason, go round the corner of the world, and it shows it from a different angle. But yeah, it was just bad. And I played that one, but I didn't play the proper game, even if it was something of a pretender to the rest of the series. Like, I do want to play that at some point.
I'm actually thinking of the Dark Knight game, which
I think, by all
accounts, was actually quite good, but it was, you know, compared to the Arkham games, it's like an A to B linear game.
Was that Batman Begins, that one?
Batman Begins it was. Yeah, that's right. It's just a, you know, mission after mission linear game. But so it kind of feels more enclosed than than the other games, like the Arkham games, but people say it was good. Hmm. It's a good movie adaptation anyway.
Nice.
It often appears in lists of that kind of thing. Good. Well, that's Christmas sorted.
That is. We've done Christmas. I suppose it's time to move on now to our giant discussion.
Yes.
Big, do you have your paper this time?
I've got it here, yeah.
Okay, it's time for the big discussion.
Big discussion.
Big discussion time. It's time for the big discussion. This big discussion, Peter, comes from Robert Mansell. Mm-hmm. He says, hey guys, for Christmas, you can build one special edition from a game series of your choice each. Using your favorite game in the series, add three additional special edition-esque things, like special cases, models, posters, or clothing, or anything else you can think of. What would it be? Sorry if this is written clunky. No, it's fine. Merry Xmas, lads. Hope next year when Peter streams the Box of Delights, Ben can be there too and enjoy it with us. Big love, Kes Kes.
Oh, it was splendiferous.
So we each have been given special Christmas permission to construct a special edition of one of our favourite games, constituting of three additional shiny things that I suppose make it a special edition.
Okay. I have always wanted something that almost already exists in this form. There is a original Spyro the Dragon PS1 press kit that occasionally comes up on eBay for like £250. And
right.
I've never yet sunk £250 on it because that is a lot of money. And if my partner knew that I'd spent £250 on a Spyro the Dragon cardboard box, basically, which just
the wedding would be off.
Well, it may well be. Yeah, I might have to marry my press kit instead. But so something like that. So the reason that I really want that is because obviously it is one of my favorite games of all time, and I'm so interested in the game's development and early days. So there are like prototype versions that people have got hold of somehow, I don't know, that they've uploaded to YouTube, and I find those super fun to watch to see what's changed, and you know, there's like cut content or changed content. Things are like different colors, and you defeat enemies in different ways and things like that. So that's all super interesting. And I believe the press kit has some descriptions of the world and the lore and the characters, which didn't make it into kind of the game manual or any of the other associated. I mean, there wasn't really anything else that came out with the game at that time. If you wanted some lore, it was either in the game or in the manual, and that was it. So I really want to know what the creative the team behind the game were like really intending with regards to the world and stuff. So they still talk about it in interviews now, but, you know, it was many years ago and they forget things and they're like, oh yeah, I can't really remember what that was supposed to be about. So I would like some sort of lore book or like development history book that talks about cutting room floor stuff and, you know, has bits of old concept art. So a little booklet. Definitely some kind of rad statuette or figurine. I've got that incense burner that sits behind us in the streaming setup at the office. But that, you know, that's just a sort of plasticky thing that didn't cost a lot of money. It was only like 20 quid or something. I'd like a really, you know, crazy expensive, what are they called? First for figures or something? Those people who make really nice video game statuettes. They're called like...
Okay.
First figures or first for figures or something, one of those, and then maybe the whole thing could come in a sick steel case.
Ooh,
yeah, just with like a rad edgy version of the original box art. So I think that's what I'd have.
Nice.
I want that book more than anything else.
Yeah,
definitely. I want to know the history of the game's development. I want to know more, and I never will at this point because everyone's forgotten, I think.
It could be you. You could be the one to go around and interview everyone.
Yeah, maybe. I should
put
do
it
that.
Together. You should. Yeah. Get on it right now.
Yeah.
Right now.
What's your present, Ben?
I have chosen a far more recent one than that.
Ooh.
Because there was one of my other choices here was probably going to be Final Fantasy VII, the original one. But there was actually some kind of special edition at the time. And it came with minifigures and everything of all the different characters. But right. You very rarely see that pop up online anymore. I think it was a UK special edition as well of some kind. So that already exists. But the reason it took me so long to pre-order Demon's Souls for PS5 was because I was certain they were going to do some kind of special edition or limited edition.
Yeah.
And they didn't. They didn't do a damn thing. It was just that they did a digital deluxe version, which came with a few items and a soundtrack, but they didn't do anything special for the physical launch, which is really disappointing. So I've constructed my own.
Wonderful.
The Demon's Souls PlayStation 5 Remake Special Edition comes with a statue of the Tower Knight, perhaps the most iconic boss in that game, certainly from a visual perspective. So just a big plastic nightman with a giant shield. I'd like one of those.
Yeah.
I would also like a poster of maybe the ruined Boletarian Castle, which is sort of the first Archstone, or a kind of blueprinty type map of the first of the of the four levels of that Archstone. So it starts off and you're at the castle gates, obviously, then you work your way across a bridge. You then go through sort of the town at the bottom of the castle, and then you're in the castle itself for the final boss of that Archstone. Mm-hmm. So some sort of like artist's impression of like a zoom out of the whole thing, I think would be a really cool poster to have, or a piece of art anyway. And the final thing I'd have, a little trinket, the blue eye stone, which is the thing you use to put down your sign on the floor to be summoned in.
Right.
Maybe sort of a physical representation of that, just a little blue gem on a nice little stand or something. Just a little trinket. I think that'd be really cool. It's the kind of stuff that you can definitely find on Etsy somewhere because mad, talented genius has made it. But yeah, I just feel like they really missed a trick by not doing special editions. I know the game was expensive anyway, and that's maybe why they didn't bother, because it would potentially push the cost up way above what anyone would be willing to pay for it. But I would have probably been willing to pay for it.
It's a bit weird nowadays. Like, I feel like special editions are slightly less common compared to maybe 5-10 years ago, or a little over five years ago. And sometimes it's like there'll be regional, like, exclusives. I think that I think Australia had a fancy, like, steel case for the Reignited trilogy. And I think I also saw a crazy Crash Bandicoot Insane Trilogy collectors, or like, so at least the box was special. I don't know if it had anything extra inside, but like, it had this big cube-shaped box. It was like, in fact, I think it was the shape of a crate, like a Crash crate. And I think that was like region-specific. Maybe that was something that might have been fan-made, actually. I might be making that one up. But definitely Australia had this random exclusivity thing for the steel version, which I don't know why that would be the case, because I think lots of people would buy that. I would have done. I mean, people were even like importing them, and I thought about it. I was like, I'm not going to pay an import fee just for that, but yeah, I would have bought it if it'd been available.
Yeah, there are some strange variants in the UK, at least. It's either Game or Amazon who have an exclusive version that's usually a steel book, or it has like a nice cardboard sleeve or something like that.
Yeah,
it doesn't usually have anything special in it. I know the
game
often has a sort of first dibs on a lot of the special editions. I had to buy Final Fantasy VII's the remake special edition from Game,
right?
Because nobody else had it.
Yeah,
and that was it. It was exclusive to Game. So yeah, it's weird. I don't know. I hope I do love a good special edition, especially a ridiculous one. You know, I'm not talking like the latest Call of Duty coming with night vision goggles, because that's nothing. I don't want that. That's stupid.
Yeah.
But a franchise that I really care about and that I love, and the characters mean a lot to me and the world means a lot to me, I'd love to have like a physical representation of that beyond just a box on a shelf, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Trinkets are fun.
They are. Yeah.
I do like the trinkets. Well, there we are. We have made it to the end of the podcast. Thank you so much, everybody, for listening. Peter is going to tell you all about how you can find us. And then before we go, we'll be running through, as always, what you can expect to come from the channel in the immediate future.
Yeah. We are available on YouTube and Twitch. That's youtube.com and twitch.tv/Team Triple Jump. That's where we put all of our videos and do all of our live streams. When we do live stream in both of those places, we're modded by Lord Rotovich, Mads Didactyl, and Trowling Badger. We've got social media, twitter.com and facebook.com, both /Team Triple Jump. Luke Eldon looks after Facebook and is doing an excellent job. Thank you, Luke. The Patreon is patreon.com/Team Triple Jump. Lots of different rewards available there. Go and check those out. You can ask questions on the podcast, for example, or get Worst Games Ever early and all sorts of other things too. There's a Discord. And the shortcut to that is bit.ly/Team Triple Jump. That's modded by Jack and Joe. Thank you, mods. The podcast, if you are watching on YouTube right now, is available in audio form at play.acast.com/s/Triple Jump. The website is triplej.mup. That's triplju.mp. And you can go to triplej.mup/shop to access our shop and buy all sorts of interesting merchandise, or triplej.mup/VODs, which will redirect you to our YouTube channel where we keep all of our VODs, which is just called Triple Jump VODs. Thank you, Pat, for editing the weekly highlights for that. And thanks to James as well for uploading all the VODs there too.
Absolutely. Instagram and Twitter, you can find Peter at @PeterAustin and myself just on Twitter @confused_dude. We do lists every Tuesday and Thursday, streams every Monday, Thursday, Friday and Sunday. Thursday being the joint stream on YouTube, Blaze It, and the others being solo streams on Twitch. Worst Games Ever is fortnightly, Friday for patrons, Sunday for everyone else. Podcast is every Saturday and we do shows one every other week. Please, if you can, leave a review on iTunes or your platform of choice. It helps something to do with algorithms. Mm-hmm. This week, we had What It Means to Me with Matthew from Botchamania and Cultaholic Wrestling talking about Smash Bros. Melee, or Melee, as the game calls it.
Does it?
It does. Smash Melee. Bros. Melee or something. Melee. I think so.
I did I play that at a friend's house, but I don't remember.
Yeah, me too. I remember it saying Melee. I might be wrong now. I can't remember. Specifically, it was a while ago, but that's up now on the channel if you'd like to go watch. That's a great episode, and we thank Matthew for taking part.
Thank you, Matthew. Yeah.
Next week, as I said, there will be a special guest podcast with a few people from Triple Jump and Cultaholics, so look out for the podcast post that should be live now, and please submit your questions. There is a video going out tomorrow. We can't do Post Some Tat this year, but we can buy each other terrible Christmas presents from a well-known, brilliant website.
Yeah.
So make sure you watch that. That'll be going out. A real Sunday treat for you. It's a good one.
It's terrible and wonderful in every way you would hope it to be.
And upsetting. Mm. Yeah, all of the terms to describe that. Rules Boss makes a return.
Oh,
he does. Hopefully on Monday, that should be there. Peter's doing his special stream on Saturday. Time to be confirmed, but presumably it will either be happening now or will be happening later. Check social media.
Yeah, I think it's going to be 12 onwards. I think, especially now that I know the podcast isn't going out at midday, it will have started at midday. 12 on Saturday. So if you're listening very soon after the podcast has gone out, I might still be live right now. Probably will be.
Yeah, go watch. Go tune in. My final stream will be on Tuesday before we break up for the holidays. Andrew, our wonderful friend Andrew from Cultaholic. Might as well be from Triple Jump. Yeah. From Cultaholic will continue to stream over the Christmas break on the Twitch channel. So go and watch him. Social media will tell you all about when he is going live and so on and so forth. So there we are. Oh, and final thing, make sure you check out the Game of the Year post when that goes up very soon, if not already. Mm. And let us know what your favorite games of the year are. And then we'll stick them in a poll in the new year. Everybody vote. And we'll do it on our Game of the Year show when we come back.
Absolutely, yeah.
Ah, just enough time.
Yeah, just enough time, exactly. Just what I was going to say. Just enough time to thank this week's sponsor. Remember, everyone, stay positive about all the negative things happening around at the moment. Mm. With the Cyberpunk 2077. The 2077 stands for how positive you should be. That's how much percentages of positive it should be.
That's a high percentage.
Yeah, it's pretty high. Yeah, it's more than 100, so I don't really know what that means mathematically. But, just stay positive about it. Because bad is not good.
No. No. It's not.
No. Right. Brilliant.
We done?
Right. Yep.
Okay. Have a Merry Christmas, everyone.
All right.
We'll
happy
see
New
you.
Year.
See you later on. Be good. And yeah, we'll see you soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.